We'll Never Say Die in this rain report for November 18, 2011, beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with this thought-provoking rain report. 8 years ago, in September 2003, a popular ham magazine called 73 ceased publication after an illustrious four-decade run. Its editor and publisher was Wayne Green, W2 Never Say Die, a flamboyant and controversial character who was the driving force behind 73 most of those years. Rains Hapali, KC9RP, spoke to Wayne about his controversial ham magazine shortly after it ceased publication in the fall of 2003. Oh, I hasten to add here that the opinions expressed by Wayne in this rain report don't necessarily reflect those of anyone connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network. Here now is part one of a replay of HAP's 2003 interview with Wayne Green, W2NSD.
This is the rain report. I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP in Chicago.
73 has stopped publication.
73 Magazine was a household name for many years. The editor and publisher of 73 Magazine, Wayne Green, W2NSD, founded 73 Magazine in 1960, and except for a three-year period in the middle 80s, was the publisher and editor of that magazine through its final issue that came out September 2003. Wayne, what happened?
Basically, amateur radio as a hobby is gradually grinding down, and it's been more and more difficult to put out the magazine. The book sales have kept 73 going for the last few years, and then I have not been invited on the Coast to Coast program very often since Art Bell retired. He's back on again for just weekends, but before that, I'd been on 22 times, and each time I'd get on, I'd get like 10,000 letters from listeners asking for my catalog, and I'd sell a whole slew of books. I haven't been on almost a year now, so the book sales have dwindled way, way down, and it made it so that there was no way to really keep 73 going. The ad sales are down, and the receipts from ad sales are down even worse than the ads. And I could see that, there's probably other things that I could do that would be more important as far as the world is concerned. Let me give just a short history of this whole thing to put it into perspective. An angel appeared one day when Alfie, my best friend, and I were in church going to Sunday school. And this angel came in with a box of old radio parts and gave them to Alfie. And Alfie looked at them and said, "Yeah, do you want them?" And I said, "Of course." So I took them home and found an article in Popular Mechanics on a radio that used a lot of the parts. So I built it, and it worked, the cigar box radio. And that got me started building. And, of course, friends all donated their old radios out of the attic, and soon I was up to here taking old radios apart. I sure wish I hadn't taken them all apart now. They're pretty valuable, I think, as antiques. I had a lot of fun building, joined the radio club in school when I went to high school. They helped teach me the code and everything for the license and so forth, and eventually got licensed as W2NSD, Never Say Die. We're talking about 1940. I was graduating from high school, and they said, "Well, you got a ham license and everything. You should go to an engineering school. And besides, we've done all these tests, and you have one of the highest mechanical aptitudes we've ever measured, and you really must become an electrical engineer." So instead of going to Dartmouth, as I thought I would, not really having any idea what to do in the future, I went to RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute up in Troy, New York, set up a course with my ham radio in my dorm, and had a ball with that, and then got pledged to a fraternity and had my ham set up there. And along came World War II. The selected service people said, "Well, we don't think people should be going to college. They should be in the Army fighting." And I didn't like the sound of that much, so I kind of looked around for what to do. And a friend of my father's got me in touch with the head of the Naval Research Laboratory in Anacostia, Virginia. And I went down and interviewed there, and he said, "Yes, I'd love to have you working here in the lab, but first you have to go to radar school." And that made sense. So I joined the Navy and spent the next 9 months going through electronic school, a superb school, absolutely superb. At the end of that, I was supposed to get in touch with Commander Bourne at Anacostia, and I said, well, you know, heck, I'm single, and job like that should be for married people that have a family. I decided I don't like people giving me orders and telling me what to do. So it's either a destroyer or a submarine would be my best bet. And submarines paid more, so I volunteered for submarine duty. And I spent the rest of the war on a submarine as an electronic technician and wrote a book about it called Submarines in World War II, which is available. And I had some very interesting and exciting adventures in a submarine. We were one of the top-scoring submarines. At any rate, after the war, back to college, somehow I've always been interested in new technologies. When I first got my license, I had built a 2.5-meter transceiver, a little walkie-talkie, and made my first contacts with that. Then after the war, NBFM, narrowband FM, came along with Jack Babkus, W2GDG, who discovered that or developed it, went on later to found Sonar Radio, and I was one of the first ones on with that and had a wonderful time. Then I discovered RTTY. I couldn't get John Williams, W2BFD, the fellow who was really promoting that, to do a newsletter. So I said, what the heck? And I started a newsletter, which became a magazine pretty quick, called Amateur Radio Frontiers. And I had a wonderful time with that. And pretty soon I had a column in CQ on RTTY. And then I got the editor of CQ a better job. The next thing I knew, I was the editor of CQ, 1955. And I was the editor there for 5 years to the day. And the last year, they owed me a year's back pay because they're busy paying for the publisher's yacht. Then they fired me so they wouldn't have to pay me, and they never did.
You're listening to a Rain replay of an interview with Wayne Green, W2NSD, a most controversial and pessimistic member of the ham radio publishing industry, editor and publisher of 73 Magazine from 1960 to 2003. We'll continue our interview with Wayne, conducted shortly after he ceased publication of 73 in the fall of 2003, in a moment. This is the Rain Report, going on 21 years of providing nonstop ham radio audio programming.
It was in my blood by then. I loved publishing a ham radio magazine. So I sold all the toys that I had, like a yacht, a little speedboat, an airplane, stuff like that, and got enough money just to publish the first issue of 73 Magazine, and that was 1960. It took hold and did well. And by 1963, we had 850 ham radio stores around the country carrying 73 on their counter. The magazine was growing well. I moved up to New Hampshire in 1962, get out of Brooklyn, New York, moved into a great big 40-room house up in New Hampshire, and published the magazine out of there. And then came disaster. Then came incentive licensing, which the ARRL proposed to, and the FCC put through as a proposal, which would take away all of the HF phone bands from the general class amateurs, and they'd have to get out and get their advanced class license or their extra class license. What it did was take us back to pre-war days of Class A and Class B, where the Class A had 75 and 20, and Class B had 160 and 10. And they also were taking away 15 meters and 40 meters from the general class. That's what was proposed. They also proposed that new licensees would have to wait 2 years before they could upgrade. The result of this was that it took the FCC 5 years to finally do something about this, and what they did was take away half of the phone bands, not all of them. But the ARRL convinced everybody that the FCC was going to do what they requested, and so the result was that tens of thousands of hams said, oh, I can't go down and do that license exam again. I forgotten everything that I learned the first time. I'm just not going to do it. So they sold her equipment for pennies on the dollar. This put roughly a little over 700 of the radio stores out of business in the next 2 years. It put all of the major manufacturers out of business because nobody was buying new equipment when you could buy perfectly good old sets, for $100.
Who were some of those manufacturers that went out of business?
Well, Hallicrafters, Hammerland, National Radio Company, Multi-Elmac, Gonset eventually went out of business, and Swan, and so forth. Some of them hung on a little bit, but not long. Even Collins gave up amateur radio manufacturing. And eventually, these were replaced when FM and repeaters came in 1970, a few years later, were replaced by Japanese companies. And so we have those today making about 90% of the ham radio sales these days. At any rate, with 73 Magazine, I promoted 2-meter FM and repeaters, and I said, I think I can make this so that we'll get this hobby growing again. We had about 100 repeaters in 1968. I published hundreds of articles on it, then published a repeater journal and published books on the subject and the repeater atlas and so forth and so on. The result was that it became the biggest activity in amateur radio, not only in the United States, but all around the world. We ended up with something over 8,000 repeaters. I held meetings around the country to organize the frequencies so that we'd have standardized channels all over the country. And I held a meeting with the FCC commissioners to change the rules. They had put through some terrible rules under their Prose Walker's direction. And it was almost as hard to get a repeater license as it was a commercial radio license. So I took a group of repeater people down to Washington. We held a meeting and had the biggest change in amateur radio regulations in the history of the hobby. And all of a sudden, repeaters were blossoming everywhere by the thousands. And, of course, I wrote a lot of editorials at the time saying, hey, I'm able to ski in New Hampshire and out in Aspen with a little handy talking and make phone calls through the repeater anywhere in the world. Everybody's going to want to do this. And, of course, the hams in Chicago went to the Motorola people and said, hey, here's a good possibility. And the next thing you know, we had cell phones, and there are now 2 billion users of cell phones around the world. I think more than any other publication, we helped make that happen.
This concludes the first of two Rain Reports featuring the flamboyant and controversial Wayne Green, W2NSD, whose ham radio magazine, 73, provided lots of fodder around the ham bands during its 43 years of publication from 1960 to 2003. Next time, we'll conclude HAP KC9RP's interview, conducted with Wayne shortly after 73 Magazine ceased publication in September 2003. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2011. Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from The Rain Report, www.therainreport.com.